TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Yannis Varoufakis dissects Trump's tariffs. The former Greek finance minister in conversation with Novara Media's Michael Walker. They spoke on April 8, 2025, when Donald Trump's tariffs had just collapsed the global stock markets and governments around the world were searching for a response. Yannis Varoufakis is a university teacher, author in economics and technology, and engaged in European politics. Since 2018, he has been Secretary General of DiEM25. That's Democracy in Europe Movement 2025, a left-wing pan-European political party that he co-founded in 2016. Varoufakis is being interviewed by Michael Walker, contributing editor at Novara Media. That's an independent, non-profit media organization based in the United Kingdom. Walker brings up questions not raised by many analysts in this extraordinary crisis of April 2025, and Varoufakis' answers are equally surprising. They began by remembering the importance of Richard Nixon taking the dollar off the gold standard in 1971. And Varoufakis responds to those in the U.S. who say that it can all be reversed after the midterms by reminding them that Trump already enacted a few tariffs in his first round as president and Biden did not reverse them, but made those on China worse. And Yannis Varoufakis even has proposals how governments could react now. All this in only 24 minutes. Here's Michael Walker.
Donald Trump's tariffs have pushed global stock markets into meltdown. And unlike with the global financial crisis or the fallout from the pandemic, this isn't a crisis that's come around by accident, but one that's been designed. Now, this has led many people to call the tariff shock unprecedented, but not everyone agrees. Yannis Varoufakis has written in Unheard magazine, "This commentator should know better than to pretend the shock Trump is now delivering is both unprecedented and bound to fail, like all reckless assaults on the prevailing order. The Nixon shock was more devastating than the one delivered today, especially for Europeans, and precisely because of the economic devastation caused, its architects achieved their main long-term objective, to ensure American hegemony grew alongside America's twin, that's trade and government budget, deficits." So the Nixon shock was the moment in 1971 when Richard Nixon, then president, suspended the conversion of dollars into gold. So that had the effect of unilaterally blowing up the post-war Bretton Woods system that had regulated global financial markets and trade since 1944. It was a key move in the development of neoliberalism. I caught up with Yannis to discuss the relevance of this historical comparison and to get his view on how China, Europe and the UK should respond to Trump's tariff shock. I started, though, by asking him about a more recent historical event, namely how he thinks the Trump shock compares to the 2008 global financial crisis.
2008 was our generation's 1929, so nothing compares with that in terms of the catastrophic magnitude of the shock. And also, remember, 2008 was utterly unexpected. It wasn't planned. It wasn't designed. Trump's shock is a designer shock. He chose it. So in that sense, I think we need to compare it to the events of the 15th of August, 1971, the Richard Nixon shock, which was an attempt, just like Trump is attempting to upend the world economic system. Richard Nixon did exactly the same thing with enormous success, I have to say, not from the perspective of the peoples of the world, not even the American working class or middle class, but from the perspective of those in Washington, D.C. and Camp David, to be more precise, for that summer's day in 1971, whose job was, or whose remit was, to extend American hegemony in an era when America had become a deficit country. So there are many similarities with 1971.
In 1971, that was Richard Nixon taking America away from the gold standard, so moving to a fiat currency system. I mean, you're much more of an expert on that era than I am, and sort of this issue in general. Were people saying a similar thing back then, though? Because I know, you know, people do put forward there could be a theory behind Trump's actions trying to reshape the global economy in a similar way that Nixon did back then. But also, what Trump's doing does just seem like sort of chaotic. I imagine that Nixon was a little bit more rational than Trump is now, or do you have a different perspective?
Not in the slightest. Back then, it didn't look rational. It looked like economic nationalism, geoeconomics, put it as you wish. Remember, 2 days before the Nixon shock, his Treasury Secretary, John Connolly, was the Texan politician who was in the car with JFK when JFK was shot. And he transferred to the Republicans and became Nixon's Treasury Secretary. A couple of days before the Nixon shock, in a bid to encourage him to go ahead with that, he infamously said to the president the following, and I think it's verbatim. He said, "Mr. President, my understanding is that the foreigners are trying to screw us, and our job is to screw them before they screw us." That's verbatim. And 2 days later, with a view to diminish the value of the dollar by 30%, to create magnificent forces of destruction in Europe, in Japan, and also in the United States, forces that he knew would impact very significantly on the American economy. Think of the stagflation that hit the American economy. But the theory was that the impact on the American economy would be lesser than the impact on Germany and Japan in particular, and that would restore the American hegemony, which they were fearing they were losing as a result of becoming a deficit country. There was nothing mild or more rational about what Nixon did in 1971. It doesn't mean that what Trump is doing now is going to succeed, because Nixon's shock could easily have ended up very, very differently. So it will all depend on how the rest of the world reacts to Trump, not so much on the rationality or irrationality of what he's doing at the moment.
Let's talk about what the headlines have all been about this weekend, which is the stock markets and their crash, sort of falling between sort of 5 and 15%. Should Navarra media viewers care if the stock market is taking a hit?
Well, in the same way that Navarra media audiences have no right to rejoice when the markets go through the roof, we don't have the right to take their collapse or, you know, temporary fall as a sign that all hell is coming loose. Look, the manner in which stock exchanges and money markets progress is highly divorced from the way in which humanity progresses. So there may be a coincidence of exuberance or disaster, but it's just a coincidence. Very often, when the stock exchanges are celebrating, the vast majority of the population are suffering, and vice versa. So the big question here is this. What has been happening since 1971, between 1971 and today, is a very significant class war against the working class of the United States, the working class of Britain, the working class of Germany, the working class of China, waged by an interesting coalition between American rentiers, who no longer wish to be capitalists. They were happy simply to collect rents through the financial sector, through private equity, through big tech. And the capitalists of Germany, the capitalists of Japan, and the capitalists of China. The status quo that the radical center is lamenting today, because it is true that the Trump shock is a major blow at this liberal order. The status quo that they've been lamenting has been a highly, grossly imbalanced one, one where inequality has been rising triumphantly at the expense of the capacity of most people to imagine that the world would be better for their children than it is for them. So this is what the status quo is. It could get worse. There's no doubt about that. Mrs. Thatcher taught me as a young man that when you think that things can't get worse, they do. But the interesting question is now, take China, for instance. Is China going to respond to Trump by raising the living standards of the Chinese so that they can consume more of the stuff that so far has been going to the United States in the form of net exports? Will they find some way of communicating with the inane Europeans who seem to have absolutely no idea of what is going on? Or is Europe and China going to engage in a tariff war between them as the European Union tries to impede the diversion of China's net exports from the United States to Europe? So it will all depend on that. And unfortunately, the majority of people out there, whether we're talking about the United Kingdom, Germany, Italy, Spain, have no say in very significant decisions that will determine whether the shock of Donald Trump can become a force for good or another force that enhances inequality and diminishes their prospects.
I mean, a response to sort of Donald Trump's trade war, I think, from many in the liberal establishment has been to sort of say everything was perfect before. Is there a danger you're going in sort of too far in the other direction? Because, I mean, if you look at what's happened since 1971, yes, inequality has increased, especially in sort of Western countries. But in China, for example, hundreds of millions of people have been lifted out of poverty. And there are countries like Vietnam and Bangladesh, which seem to have been on that trajectory to some degree, incomes rising, the middle class growing, and sort of Trump putting an end to the system whereby countries like China, Vietnam, and Bangladesh can get rich via export-led growth. You know, that might be something we would miss, no?
Look, indeed. Capitalism is a terrible system, but it can only get worse sometimes if the powers that be act in the way that ruling classes have acted before, that is, idiotically. So, look, you know me because I sort of became politically active as a result of the euro crisis. What was the euro crisis? Were things going swimmingly in Europe for the majority of people up until 2010? No. Things were extremely hard for large sections of the working class across Europe. And the euro crisis came. It was an opportunity to improve things, but it was also an opportunity to make things worse. And it turned out that it made them worse. So it is highly plausible that Donald Trump's shock is going to reduce prosperity even below the levels at which we found it 2 weeks ago or so. But on the other hand, let us not forget that the rise of living standards that you refer to go hand in hand with a substantial reduction in the quality of life for many of the people whose incomes have increased. Because here's an example of it is perhaps a pointed example, an example that may seem out of place, but it isn't. Think of the natives in Australia. In 1788, when the British arrived there, they had zero income. Now, the Aborigines in Australia, they have an income which is a few thousand dollars a year. When were they better off? When they had zero income or today? So you see where I'm getting at. The manner in which globalization steamrolled over the working classes of Vietnam, of China, in order to keep the net export machine going. Now, there's no doubt that in both places, and I have a great deal of affinity both with China and Vietnam, there is remarkable progress. And that should not be jeopardized. But at the same time, there is a class war happening in China as well. Because for, let's say, Chinese aluminium to remain competitive in California, Chinese wages have to be repressed. If the Trump shock causes the Chinese authorities to boost aggregate demand domestically, and therefore to increase Social Security, to increase the social wage, in order to rebalance the economy away from net exports to the United States, then the previous years of globalization may have turned out to be a precursor of something good for the working class in China. But that depends on politics. It is not something that will emerge out of markets. It's not the result of market forces. It will only be the result of class struggle.
Let's talk about tariffs sort of more generally. Obviously, Trump's move, lots of people just pointing at it, saying it looks irrational. You seem to be sort of saying it has a bit more logic to it than maybe it's being given credit for. I presume, though, you would have done something very different. And so I want to know from your perspective, someone who's sort of critical of the mode of globalization we've had over the past few decades, also very critical of Donald Trump. If Yanis Varoufakis were in the White House, what tariffs would you be introducing?
Well, I wouldn't be introducing tariffs. I would certainly take aim at the gross imbalances. You can't continue to have a world in which America lives off rents. The American ruling class collects and collects and collects rents produced by the proletariat in China, in Vietnam, in Germany, and so on, with the American working class living in wastelands between the East Coast and the West Coast. So there is no way that would be acceptable to anyone who cares about humanity. But frankly, tariffs would not be my weapon of choice. For me, it would be a multilateral conference, New Bretton Woods, whereby you sit around and effectively, to put it bluntly, you take a leaf out of John Maynard Keynes's suggestion back in 1944 at the Bretton Woods Conference, and you do that which he had suggested that the world should have done back then, which is to create a monetary system that simultaneously punishes symmetrically both surpluses and deficits, not just surpluses, not just deficits, both of them, and out of levies that you impose upon symmetrically deficits and surpluses, you create a fund, a global fund, a green fund, from which you invest in green technologies in the deficit countries, particularly in the global south. That's what I would have done, but that is why I could never possibly be the president of the United States if any political systems spewed me out as the president of the United States. It wouldn't be the present one.
And let's now move to your history as a game theorist. I know that's something you specialized in, or probably do still specialize in, as an economics professor. Obviously, people know you more now as a former Greek finance minister, but that's where you made your name, as far as I understand it. How should countries be responding to Trump's tariffs? According to game theory, you've got an opportunity, haven't you, as a government, to say, we won't respond. You know, we'll take the tariffs and we'll try not to retaliate, because that could just make things worse. Or you can say, Trump, you've introduced these tariffs, we're going to raise you. Maybe we'll put tariffs on you that are even higher than what you've done to us to show we mean business. What should governments around the world, be they in Beijing or Brussels or London, what should they be doing now?
Well, you don't need to be a mathematician or a chess master to know that when you're running a major surplus, trade surplus, with a country like the United States, and you have somebody like Trump prepared to take the tariff war to its logical conclusion, that you can't win that war. If I am selling stuff to you and you're not selling stuff to me, then there's no way I can use tariffs against you. I will run out of things to tariff well before you do, and I will lose. It really is a no-brainer, as they would say. So what should you do? It depends on, the United Kingdom is quite different to the European Union. And, you know, it's interesting, isn't it, that Donald Trump, who really loves Brexit because he hates the European Union, has created this wedge, 20% tariffs for the European Union, 10% for the UK, which, by the way, if any strong supporters of the United Kingdom return to the European Union are listening, this was a Trump strategy by which to make sure that Britain never returns to the single market or to the customs union, because who would dare do that when you have this wedge? But setting that aside, the European Union and China are in a similar situation because they are both running very large trade surpluses with the United States. So if I'm right that you cannot win a trade war when you're in that position, well, don't retaliate. The best strategy, strategic response to retaliation is not to retaliate and to do what instead? have to do something. Well, you have to blow up your own economic model. Because both Germany, and when we're talking about the European Union, we're really talking about Germany. This is the steam engine of the Eurozone, of the European Union. Both Germany and China have based their development model on net exports, which is exactly, at the same time, is not just net exports of what? Not just goods, you know, Mercedes-Benzes and BYDs and all that. You're also exporting deflationary forces to the deficit country. Well, that business model is now finished because you have Trump who says, no, I'm going to tariff you to extinction. It can't work. So what is the alternative? The alternative is to invest in your own country. In the European Union, we haven't had any net investment for the last 15 years. So the obvious answer is not, of course, to invest in armaments, because this is a fool's wager. Only the United States can have a military industrial complex that operates as an engine of growth, because they have one war after the other. Is this what Europe is going to do? It used to be a peace project. What Europe needs is investment in the technologies that it has missed out on. Batteries, solar power, green energy generally, algorithmic capital, what I call cloud capital. You need a large-scale investment program, something like, you know, 700, 800 billion a year. Do that, and then your reliance on the United States shrinks. Your capacity to keep up with the Chinese increases, and you stop being a sorry, idiotic continent. This is what Europe should be doing. China should introduce a basic wage, a basic income for its citizens. I've been advocating that with my Chinese friends, and I will continue to do so. So forget tariffs. When you're in a surplus position, you can't win that war. Look inside your own political economy and rebalance it away from the ruling class towards investment, and investment not only in the conditions of the working class, but also in your technology.
Finally, you're sort of suggesting that countries, or at least surplus countries, should respond to Trump's tariffs by sort of radically transforming their economies. Now, there'll be many people who want that to happen anyway, but I think they'll only do that if they're pushed. And they might be thinking, look, these tariffs, you know, they look bad, but they can't last long, right? Navarra media audiences might not care if the stock markets plunge, but Donald Trump, at least if we sort of believe what he said 4 years ago, really did. He seemed to be obsessed with the stock markets going up then. So how likely do you think it is that he sees what's happening to the stock markets? He sees that there's a recession incoming and says, actually, well, he wouldn't say my mistake, would he? He'd sort of say, I've won huge concessions from all of these countries and the tariffs are going down. How likely do you see a U-turn, presumably dressed up as some kind of victory for the Trump administration?
I have no idea what's going on in the Donald's brain, if such a thing exists. Allow me to say a couple of things, though, in response to your question. The first thing is, there is no doubt that many around the world, in Britain, in Germany, in Italy, in France, and so on, and in the United States, think, oh my God, you know, what's happening to us? Let's wait until the midterms. Let's wait for another 4 years. Somebody else will come who will reverse course. Well, that is just pure wishful thinking. If you think of what Trump 1.0 did, yeah, the first administration of Trump, they introduced various tariffs. Did Biden reverse any one of them? Any of them? None. Even the new Cold War that Trump started against China, it was he who started it in 2017, 2018, with massive tariffs on aluminium and other goods, and also the ban on Huawei. Let's not forget that. What did Biden do? Turbocharged it, made it worse, made it more toxic, more belligerent. That's why I'm saying it's wishful thinking to think that, you know, somebody else is going to follow up and on from Trump with reversing the course. It's highly unlikely that we are now in a new regime, independently of who succeeds Donald Trump. That's the first point. The second point is, Trump always had two arrows to use against what he considers to be the enemy. The one was tariffs, and the second one was tax cuts. I very much fear, and I'm saying this as somebody who really, truly, deeply opposes tax cuts. They are a major gift to the unworthy and an instrument of class war against the working class. But the second arrow is tax cuts. I bet you, Michael, that when he announces massive tax cuts, particularly for rich people, particularly for capital, you know, the stock exchanges are going to go through the roof. And then I very much fear that we're going to have another situation, because I'm old enough to remember Ronald Reagan. Because you see, the Republicans in the United States are the ones who really don't care about austerity, and they don't care about budget deficits, and they don't have the Rachel Reeves fixation with fiscal rules and so on. They let the whole thing blow up, especially if it's tax cuts to their brethren that they're considering. He will push the deficit of the budget, the federal budget, to 7% if he needs to 8%. He doesn't care. Reagan didn't care. Bush didn't care. And the rest of the world will have to pay for it. So, you know, let's not count our chickens and start, looking at our watch for the midterms to arrive, hoping that we will go back to where we were before the 2nd of April, in the same way that the Nixon shock of the 15th of August 1971 was never reversed. You know, President Carter came in, a thoroughly decent man compared to all the other presidents that I've come to know or to know, to live under during my life. And yet, what did he do about the Nixon shock? Nothing. He actually made it even more powerful by appointing Paul Volcker to the Federal Reserve, to the Central Bank of the United States. Paul Volcker was in Camp David during those days of the Nixon shock. He was the one who was advising Kissinger and Connally and Nixon to go ahead with it. So there is a continuity. The United States is like a large ship. It takes some time to turn its course, but when it turns, it turns. It doesn't go back.
That was the former Greek finance minister and university teacher Yanis Varoufakis, interviewed by Michael Walker, contributing editor at Novara Media. That's an independent, non-profit media organization based in the UK. They spoke on April 8, 2025, when Donald Trump's tariffs had just collapsed the global stock markets and governments, and really everybody from workers to activists to academics around the world, were searching for a response. There's a 24-minute film on YouTube that you can see for free. Search under the title Yanis Varoufakis Dissects Trump's Tariffs. And I want to express my thanks to Varoufakis and Novara Media for the use of this amazing interview. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. TUC Radio takes its name from an aeronautical term. Time of useful consciousness is the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.